Today's program is proudly brought to you by EscapeMaker.com. That's EscapeMaker.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. We talk about...
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, coming to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on a beautiful spring day.
Yes, finally.
Hi, Anne, joining me in the studio. Producer Anne, welcome.
Hey.
How was your weekend?
It was good.
It was good?
It was great, yeah.
You came in and went to the bar and got a new sour drink at the... from the cocktail maven up there. And I want to know what you're drinking because it looks really good.
I did. It's called Alvina. Alvina. Okay. It's from Belgium and it's an undressed sour. And it's great.
So it looks like Coca-Cola. Is it alcoholic?
Yeah, it's a beer.
It's a beer. Okay.
So it's just like, but I feel like I've been waiting.
You know, I was thinking of a shrub. That's where my confusion came
in. Okay, what's a shrub?
A shrub is a vinegar-based non-alcoholic cocktail.
Oh.
And so, but that's what I was thinking.
Okay. That sounds classy, but no, guys. Mine is just a beer. Well, can I say why? Because I've...
Totally. Yeah, keep it real. Keep it real.
I had to settle my stomach because even though I am a full-grown adult woman, I have still forgotten that I am lactose intolerant and decided to... eat a bowl of cereal before I came here, and you know, you gotta settle things out.
Yeah,
so
I
have to go to the beer and figure it out.
I hear you. I had an incredible food weekend.
Okay.
And I'm gonna bring on the line with us listener John, all the way from the West Coast. Hi, John.
Hi, Emily. Hi, Anne.
I'm so excited to hear your voice. So if listeners were following along on the Instagram or Twitter or Facebook feed this weekend, they got to see my adventure with the care package that John sent for me from his family shellfish farm called Taylor Shellfish, outside of Seattle, right?
A little bit south of Seattle. We're maybe an hour away from there.
So a few weeks ago, John put a picture of a gooey duck up on Facebook, and I facetiously said, "Can you send me one?" And he said, "Yes."
Amazing.
So in the mail, via airplane, the logistics of which John and I discussed on Facebook were absolutely fantastic because 48 hours from mud to my house in Parsippany, New Jersey on the East Coast, I had this enormous single clam. Now, John, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about the gooey duck for people who have never seen it before or heard of it before. I learned about it from Dirty Jobs many years ago. Mike Rowe visited a gooey duck farm. Was that your gooey duck farm?
No, that's a gooey duck farm where I work.
Oh, okay.
And it's a nice, huge, very diverse farm that has oysters, clams, and a huge wild gooey duck bed.
So what exactly... describe for us through the medium of radio what a gooey duck looks like, and you can be as NC-17 as you
as
want.
Gross as you want.
So a gooey duck is—it's a shelled animal. It's a burrowing. It's the largest burrowing clam, and it has a small white shell the size of your hand, and probably a siphon that is 3 inches wide and 24 inches long. And it's leathery, kind of like an elephant trunk.
That is a very, very good way to put it. And I'll tell you, when I was checking to see if he was still alive, I put him on the cutting board, on a cookie sheet, and he would extend his trunk out, and then I would squeeze it, and he was cold, so he would like very slowly retract it back in again. We had so much fun. So I'd never worked with one of these animals before. Now, my dad is a clam digger. I'm the daughter of a bayman, but we don't have anything like this on the East Coast. So I followed your instructions, which in the Instagram videos that I posted, you can see your instructions like on my cutting board the entire time. And I just kind of went at it with a knife. And it was one of these experiences. Like, it's rare when you make it to 35 years old that you get to do something brand new. And I just had so much fun. I felt like a little kid. So I blanched him quickly in boiling water, and then you peel the siphon, and then inside there's a steak. And John, was there anything in my technique particularly identifying where the steak and the siphon met, like, I wasn't quite sure where I was supposed to cut them apart. But any tips on what I was doing?
Well, basically, you're going to eat all parts of the animal that are outside of the shell. And if there's something inside the shell, we're going to discard that. And there's this odd thing that's it's probably the size of a golf ball called the gut ball, which is just this really gross visceral mass. And we just throw that away. It's mainly algae in there.
So there was definitely something inside the shell that I ate, and it was delicious. And then, everyone's faces, everyone's trying not to crack up at the face that I just made when you said don't eat anything from the inside of the shell. I got like a long, and maybe it was, I guess, it, I don't remember. I got like a long rectangle that was like the two straws. No, the siphon was the two straws next to each other, right?
Yes.
And then I had this like long rectangle that had kind of, it looked like it was sort of cinched in the middle that I thought
that was
the steak.
So that's the steak itself. And then you find that where the two clam shells would come together on the outside. And it's a really delicious portion of the clam because it's tender and it's not as tough and chewy as the siphon.
So we had no idea what to expect in terms of flavor and texture. And it was one of the most spectacular things I have ever eaten.
Wow.
It was so fresh. It just tasted like low tide, but because you were eating like this mussel, it's not like eating a raw clam like we know them, or even like a raw oyster, because there's none of the sort of softness. It's like crunchy. I don't even, I don't know if I'm describing it the right way. I'm trying to think of an equivalent, which you'd think I would have done before we went on air, but no.
We like to roll with the punches.
I roll with the punches. So then we very, very thinly sliced part of it. My husband super thinly sliced it, and it curled up when we cut it. And so it looked like little, almost like little popcorn balls, because we thought it would stay flat like sashimi, and it curled up, and we could not stop my kid from eating them. He was just like, no. Loved them. And then the following morning, we had a brunch of your oysters, which, and I say this with much love for East Coast oysters, they were the best oysters I've ever eaten in my entire life.
Wow.
They were, my mouth is watering just thinking about them. And my husband and my father-in-law and I were standing in the kitchen eating them, and we were like, when they're gone, there's not going to be any more. And we just had them with some lemon and like an occasional dash of Tabasco, and my husband made a quick mignonette sauce, and it was just such an incredible weekend, John. So I want to say thank you so much for taking such good care of us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Two Arc of Taste products in one box.
So tell me about the Arc of Taste.
Well, Arc of Taste are a series of I want to say plants and animals selected by Slow Food, and eat it to save it, and they're either rare for the environment, or they have this amazing history to them. And what we can do as consumers is support the farmers that grow them.
I love that. I had Patrick Martins, who's Slow Food USA founder, and he was talking about that with Heritage Breed pigs, that they, in order to maintain their populations, you have to create a demand for them through family farms. And so tell me about the two types of oysters. There were the little teeny tiny ones that were like the size of a half dollar, and then much bigger ones that when you look at them, they look intimidating because they're like the size of your tongue, but they just like melted. They were so soft and buttery.
Well, you had two different species. Yes, you had the Olympia oyster, which is the native oyster to the West Coast. And I think there's probably less than 20 oyster growers that are really growing those these days. One challenging thing about them is they're very temperamental to environmental conditions, and they have about a 5-year farm cycle. And so they have, but they're this tiny oyster. They, like you said, it's the size of a half dollar, but they have this marvelous flavor that far exceeds what you'd expect from a bite size of what you're eating. And the other oysters were a Pacific oyster, and you know, I mean, like any oyster, it's going to be unique to the body of water where it's grown. And so even though these Olympia oysters and Pacific oysters are going to go side by side, they have these amazing flavor profiles that are vastly different from each other.
totally different. And then that beautiful curled shell. The shells were like ribbons, and they were just so beautiful. I'm really gushing over this, and it brings me, like, it's my childhood comfort food. It's like raw clams and oysters. You know, most kids it's blue box macaroni and cheese. For me, it's like, no, I want raw shellfish.
Daughter of a Bayman.
So you have an I see that Taylor Shellfish has an online store, so anyone can order these things and have them delivered. Correct.
That's correct. The gooey duck run about $30 a pound. And with today's logistics, we can get oysters anywhere in the world.
That, and I'll tell you, $30 a pound, it's the best thing. I mean, if you like scallops, but firmer with a snap and a crunch. I mean, I can't speak highly enough for this thing. Yeah. And it's really fun to play with. And so I put some sped up videos on. So if you want to see someone do it in, like, you know, six times, because Instagram, your videos can only be like 15 seconds long. Mm-hmm. But I'm, you know, John can answer questions. I can answer questions, and I hope somebody goes out and buys a gooey duck because I want to hear about it. Okay, John, thank you so much for coming on. Anything else that we should know about you and Out West? And I really need to get to Seattle.
Well, I think one unique thing about West Coast shellfish farming that's different from the East Coast is we're built around the tides, and so we wait till the tide goes out before we do our work. And, you know, in the winter it's nighttime, and in the fall it's early morning at 1 a.m. tides. Mm. And it's an amazing experience where you can get your fingers and boots in the mud and really work with what you're growing.
I absolutely love to go dig clams with my feet. I love it. And you and I have had some Facebook conversations where you'll say, like, oh, I'm on the tide. I have to go out because of the tide. And I just, I miss living on the water so much. And the one other question, the harvesting of the gooey ducks, I saw pictures where people are like up to their chests in water trying to get these things out of the ground. Is it like a dangerous thing to do?
No, it's not dangerous, but there is this really fun tension with the tide coming in and the fact that these clams are 24 to 36 inches into the substrate. And so your arm does get deep in this cold water. And as you're looking at the tide coming in, there's this, you don't know whether you're going to get the clam or not. It's kind of fun. You get sense of accomplishment in harvesting them.
Right. It's like man versus the sea. And like, I will eat this.
Like, real, like, authentic
life
adventure.
Well, thank you so much. I truly appreciate it. I'm going to leave our conversation there. Listeners, you can go to taylorshellfishfarm.com, and there's an online store. Have these things delivered direct to your door. I'll tell you, they showed up perfect and delicious. Delicious, fit right in my refrigerator. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have Andy and Ashley from Presentation Party Night.
Visit a farm. Log on to escapemaker.com for more ideas on local weekend getaways and day trips, including orchards, farms, and wineries. Or come by Escape Maker's Yellow Tent in Grow NYC's Green Markets and pick up a guide to local agritourism escapes to the Green Market's own farmers and producers. The guide will be updated seasonally to feature farms, wineries, and destinations in New York City, New York State, New Jersey, Vermont, and Pennsylvania. Plus, Escape Maker will offer overnight packages to these destinations so you can get the full experience. No car? No problem. Escape Maker features plenty of ideas for car-free getaways, including discounts via Amtrak. There's no better time to explore outside the city. Soak up the fresh air and scenery like a butterfly and support your local farmer. Log on to escapemaker.com to get inspired and make your escape through the net.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, coming to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Hi, Anne.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, fine.
He was great.
He was so great.
He was so cute. Like, when you talk only in email, like, I didn't know. No. I had no idea what his voice was. He was like, we should have him back on.
Totally. He turned into a full-fledged guest. Yeah, he was, like, adorable and smart and wonderful. Yep. So, John, kudos.
Awesome. And great shellfish. Was it clear that I liked the shellfish?
It was that, I would say, above all, was definitely clear.
So, joining us in the studio now, we have Andy and Ashley, who run a monthly event called Presentation Party Night. Welcome, you guys.
Hello.
So,
hello.
The listeners may remember that I participated in the Verbal Fight Club, where it was a Presentation Party Night, Verbal Fight Club hybrid. Mm-hmm. And the theme that night was about eating animals. Yes. But the themes change every month, right?
Yes.
So tell me about Presentation Party Night.
Do you want to start?
Sure. So we started just about 5 years ago now. This summer will be our five-year anniversary, as just sort of a weird, dumb thing as a group of friends in a loft in Bushwick. We all felt like we needed to get together and do something other than sit around at a bar and get drunk, and so we decided maybe we should sit around and tell each other stuff and get drunk. So just every month we have like five or six people from all walks of life give a talk about whatever they feel knowledgeable about, do like a 10-minute presentation on really anything. It has varied widely throughout its history, and there's free beer, and so
I just heard everyone's ears perk up.
It's like free beer. Fantastic,
yeah. Yeah. So the next one that's coming up in May, it's the third Sunday of every month, right? Mm-hmm. So that's May 17th. Is there a theme?
There is not a theme. We generally try not to set a theme just because we're trying to keep it as an open platform for people.
Okay.
I'm a designer by profession, and I go to a lot of events that are like so specifically geared towards certain people. Right. And we really, throughout the whole time of Presentation Party Night, it's been about being as inclusive as possible and really about everyone. So I feel like it's better to keep it open, and we end up getting, you know, people interested in one subject. They might come for a talk and then find out that they're like super fascinated by something else. So it kind of gives people an opportunity to get exposed to different things as well.
I love this idea of like structured hive mind with beer and at a, like it's awesome. So how many people on average turn out?
Usually I would say about like 60, 70. Sometimes
Holy
in
crap,
the summer it can get really big and we'll have like 100 people. It definitely picks up like at the high point of summer and then also at the high point of winter when everyone's just tired of being inside.
Right.
Somebody can,
yeah. I need to see other human beings.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And so if someone wants to speak, do they do that before? Like, should they sign up before? Or
yeah,
do you
they
just
should
kind of come and.
No, they contact us. A lot of times people will come to an event and then get really inspired and be like, I want to talk at the next one. So they send us an email. They send us an email, and then we kind of get the ball rolling. It's not completely like impromptu.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's really only like two rules if you want to talk, and the first rule is that you can't sell anything because we're just not interested in that.
Right.
Okay.
But the other rule is you have to come to Presentation Party Night at least once first, because it's pretty singular, I think, in the world of like speaking engagements, because the talks are very short and they're. They don't necessarily relate to one another, and everybody is drinking.
Right.
Yeah, it's definitely good to get like a finger on the pulse, because I mean, we've had people come before and do presentations without coming, and it works out, but I feel like they're usually thrown into something that they don't realize. They're like, oh, I didn't know that it was... It's hard to, like, exactly explain what the environment's going to be like when they get there.
Right. And these are... It's an opportunity for people to, like, hash out ideas that they're having, right? So, like, if you are passionate about a subject and you want to feel out if there would be... All right, so I'll use a real-life example. I worked really, really hard to try to get a seafood cookbook published. It's not happening. No one's publishing seafood cookbooks, which is a whole other story. But I'm considering the possibility of self-publishing it. Mm-hmm. And it would be the kind of thing that I would bring to a presentation party night to kind of gauge the interest of the group, right? So now if there's 60 to 100 people who could say, yes, do it, or I wouldn't buy that, it would be a really good kind of testing ground for ideas. Yeah. Does that count as selling something?
No, I think that's fine if you're putting an idea out there, because you're giving people an opportunity to give feedback, which I think is a good part of our event, is that our audience is very engaged. Mm. And people love being able to, you know, speak up and give their peace of mind. So if there's, as long as there's an opportunity for someone to be able to interact and do that, and or definitely, hopefully, take something away from it and learn something from it, then I think that's the real value, and that's what we're looking for.
So what are some of the rowdier conversations you've had? Do they get rowdy? Or is everyone super civilized?
Yeah, they get rowdy sometimes. Generally anything about sex or gender.
Gender.
In general.
Gender is
like gender politics gets people really, really going.
Bruce Jenner this weekend. You might have a lot to talk about at the upcoming one.
Yeah.
What was Cody's that was like the only time we've ever gotten hate mail?
Oh, no. We didn't get hate mail. We got an email from someone who thoughtfully told us that he felt like it was the wrong person to be speaking on the subject.
Hmm. And do you remember what the subject was?
It was like the difference between men and women. It was a little bit...
It was a hard sell, no matter who was selling it.
Yeah.
It was just, like, super binary and, like, right. Yes. And doing, that's it. That's
yeah, right, and, right. And I mean, it was one of those times where having a white cis male do that talk was... But at the same time, people came to his defense during the talk. They were like, well, why not let this guy talk about it? Like, you know, there was definitely... There still ended up being, I think, a good conversation about who... whose voice should be heard or should, as if there is like one person's voice who should be heard, everyone's voice should be heard. So I think it gave a good opportunity to let that happen. But also at the same time, we got feedback from people that are like, well, I wish you'd, you know, had someone
else. I mean, obviously it's like subjective, but then there's also that, like, that's definitely gonna stir some emotions that it shouldn't.
This, I have to say, like, as someone who would go in as a speaker, it's like, I mean, not that what I talk about is all that controversial, but like, It would be intense to go in front of a room of people and state a sort of binary is a good word. Binary, you know, and then be prepared for the feedback of 60 to 100 strangers. Yeah. Like, I could see that coming a mile away. I'm not sure I would set myself up for that.
it tends to work out pretty well. I think the crowd... It's never even what I expect, and I've been to every single one. But like people are a lot more thoughtful and forgiving, I think, of anybody who's willing to go up there and put themselves in front of people. We have a guy who's given a couple talks who's a veteran from Afghanistan, and a lot of the stuff that he talks about, I'm expecting like everybody in the crowd to just be like, just because, you know, we have a Brooklyn crowd, like we have young hipster crowd. But every time he's so thoughtful and like caring about the subject matter that I think people just really respond to the fact that he put himself out there. And there's always a lot of really interesting, productive conversation about like the realities of being in a war.
Right.
It's like when there's like humans being humans in a room together, you get a lot more empathy and you get a lot more just thoughtful reactions.
Yes,
to
it is like the opposite of the comment section anyway.
There's a great photograph of Michael Jackson in the Thriller video, where he's sitting in a movie theater and his face is lit by the screen that you don't see, and it's just him eating popcorn, and someone has put white block type around him, and it says, "I just came here for the comments." And it pops up in, like, you know, threads of internet, especially on Jezebel. Like, you see it all, and I'm like, I did the same thing. So speaking of internet-based opportunities, you are in a new venue where with live stream, right? So you don't have to be in Brooklyn to participate.
Right.
So listeners from all over the country, how can they get involved?
Well, every month, while we're doing the event, we are being live streamed by live stream.
Live stream is the name of a company.
Yes.
Who also does the thing. It's like onomatopoeia. They do the thing that they say they do.
Yes. Kind of like presentation party night.
Right.
It is. But yeah, so they're a company that provides live streaming services and software and hardware, and they are hosting us now, and they have this amazing setup where they're live mixing us and, like, being able to get the best shots of the speakers, and the video is being played for anyone with access to the internet. And we've had some great, we've already had people tune in from all over the place, and there's a comment board, so we can do things like if someone wants to actually engage and ask questions, they can send comments and or questions, and we can answer them, like, live with the audience. So there's a good opportunity to interact from wherever you are.
Man, we live in the future. It's crazy. I did something like this over the weekend that was live streamed, but I don't know what the user experience was. I heard from someone who was listening that they were seeing things that were not happening on stage. So either they were not looking at the right thing or something was breaking down. But I think you guys are going to have, like, it's going to look like a TED Talk. Like, it's going to be so cool. Okay, so your website is presentationpartynight.com.
Yes.
And there's an email contact there for people, because you are actively looking for speakers, right?
Yes, we are. We're always looking for people with different ideas or points of view that they want to share with everyone.
I love this idea.
Yeah.
And quickly, because it is all the half hour just flies.
Always.
It just flies. Mm-hmm. Ashley, you are also involved in a upcoming food talk about food in the future, right?
Yes.
So for our science, our food science listeners, this is going to be fascinating.
Yeah. So I'll be doing a talk May 6th at Union Hall for the Empiricist League, which is a science-focused lecture series. And it's going to be a panel with three speakers. I'm going to be talking about entomophagy and...
I don't know what that is. You said it off air, and I specifically did not stop you.
This is the thing that kind of scares you. It's eating insects. So I'll be talking about harvesting your own insects for meat and eating.
Now, I know that I have to come around on this, and maybe you're the person to, like, hold my hand and walk me through it. I realized, I've made statements before that I realize are factually untrue. I do eat insects. Anytime I eat anything with red food coloring, basically, I am already eating
a beetle.
So I know that it's going to probably save the global population, and I know that it's the right thing to do. I accidentally stepped on a cricket today. And
I could share with you, there's a great company called Six Foods that's doing insect cricket chips. Basically, they're cricket flour based tortilla chips.
Oh, God.
You wouldn't even know.
Oh, God.
I could give you one and you wouldn't even...
My spine is like... tingles up the back of my spine. Okay, wait. What's it called?
Six Foods.
Six Foods. I'm going to... maybe they'll send me a sample to try on air.
Yeah.
And see if I can...
You never know.
Oh, would you eat a cricket chip?
They just taste like tortilla chips. They don't taste like anything.
And they have an added protein punch, so they're... extra good for you.
So May 6th?
Yes,
at
May
Union
6th
Hall.
At Union Hall.
And the other two speakers, you said tissue culture, right?
Yes.
Is that growing meat?
Yeah, in vitro meat. A nonprofit called New Harvest that kind of promotes this and is trying to help people grow it as a movement.
I really want to come to this. I'm like, this is right up my alley of, like, total fascination.
Yeah, and then we have someone talking about GMO advocacy.
In a good way.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a real presentation party night flash, you know, Molotov cocktail into the crowd. most of the scientists whom I love say, get over it. It's fine. People have been genetically modifying food since we started planting things with intention. Yes.
Yeah.
It's so true.
It's all GMO.
It's all GMO. And like, that's such an unpopular view. But I, you know, I had the conversation about raw milk a lot, how the press ran away with a... Essentially, a woman had a miscarriage. She had had raw milk to drink, and the press ran away with that as raw milk caused the loss of a pregnancy, and it just went crazy, and now we can't get raw milk anymore.
But isn't it like there's like a difference, right? I mean, there's, you know, like our, like, originally, like, people like modifying food, of course, and like to, you know, different strands and stuff like that, but aren't there... I don't really know, but isn't there something to be said about like GMO corn, for instance, that like you're intensively like needing more pesticides, and it is promoting like bigger insects and not insects, but why can't I think right now because I'm on air, right? But no, I mean, I'm trying to make sense of that. I do think there is something to be said for the argument against GMO of like, well, for sure.
The point is, you just can't say against GMO,
right?
Blanket.
Like as a whole, well, yeah, exactly. Like with anything,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to that sort of binary, emotion-based thing. It's easy for the press to say like GMO good or GMO bad, and then you get that comment section
it's
of
so
like
much more nuanced than that.
And I guess what's the one that frightens me is like breeding corn that has the pesticide built right into the kernel.
Like, what the hell,
like,
is
that? That seems like not a great idea. But I'm also not a scientist, so like, oh man, I'm really gonna
go for it.
Do it. It's 29. It's almost over. I can
we can
sit.
Go 5 minutes. Go.
I saw a really, really hilarious, I think it was Funny or Die, and it was what anti-vaxxers sound like to the rest of the world. Mm. And it was, one of them was like, well, I'm not a doctor, but I read all about it on the internet, so I'm basically an expert. And that's how I kind of feel about myself and GMOs. Like, I would not be able to have an intelligent conversation. And if somebody said, if Neil deGrasse Tyson said... Although my friend did make the argument, she's like, he is an astrophysicist. But he does come, he does have like all opinions. Right. And then I sound like I don't know what I'm talking about. So, but I don't think that eating pesticides is a good idea. Like that, the linear thought. No,
but to your point about not being able to speak about it, I think we all should be able to. And even if we get some of it wrong, I think the point is to talk about it and figure out where our wires are crossed or what we're not understanding, and especially since it's something that is going to continue happening.
Right.
You just have to keep
talking
about it.
I don't know that we can put the genie back in the bottle.
No, and that's totally true, because I think, you know what, I'm going to say that just right now, you know, like, I know that I know more stuff, but it's like sometimes you feel like you have to be such an expert to say anything or to have an opinion in any way. It's like, I don't think any of us really know exactly, you know, one way or the other what's right and wrong in a lot of these situations, and it's like better to go to a presentation party.
Yeah,
right?
We don't live in a media culture that allows for like nuanced, subtle dialogue about stuff.
Yeah,
like, you can't just talk about things. That's not how it works.
And you're so
you need an expert to say this is the right thing.
Especially
period.
Not in our politicians.
What does that even mean? Like expert and who paid? Whatever. You know.
When I was a little kid, there's an oft-told story that someone at, I don't remember this, but at a family party, asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I said I want to be an expert. I don't remember that, but it's family lore. I was going to say, especially not in our politicians, and we're going into this election season and talk about binary. And if anyone like demonstrates elasticity of thinking, then it's like they're flip-flopping. It's like, no, that's not the same thing as like coming to a different conclusion based on, you know, new shit
evolving
is
evolving and learning.
Right. Yeah, I want to go live on a equatorial island in the Pacific for the next 6 months.
Let's just all be braver and just start talking and making mistakes out loud.
I love that.
Let's figure it out together.
How
about that?
That's a great idea. Okay, on that note, I'm going to drive all of our listeners to the Kickstarter campaign, because we are going to use Heritage Radio Network as a platform to keep spreading good ideas. We are more than halfway through in terms of time. We are more than halfway there in terms of money. We are building a new website, because the current website, as we know it, the code on which it is based will become obsolete in 2015, and it will cease to exist. So we have partnered with CMYK Design Studios. I have seen some early renditions of the new site. It is beautiful, and it's super exciting, and it's going to launch Heritage Radio into a whole new stratosphere in terms of access and searchability. And, you know, if you like Sharp and Hot, you'll also like this, and it'll build playlists you know, kind of like based on things that you've liked and listened to already. So if you go to Kickstarter.com, we are their featured front page like chosen story to support. We have really, really awesome gifts to give to people in exchange for their support, including I don't know if I'm allowed to say this. There's a special event being planned for people who give a certain amount of money at Roberta's Pizza in a couple of weeks.
You're whispering on the radio.
I know, because I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say it. So stay tuned for that. And I really, really appreciate and love every single one of you who sends me email and sends me stuff. We got that board game. My students are going to play it tonight in class, and I'm going to give the board game makers feedback. They sent me an email. That's funny. Were tickled that I opened it on air. That was really fun. You can find me on Twitter at Chef Emily P, ChefEmilyPeterson.com, and SharpenHot.com. And Anne has a special announcement for a beloved family member.
It's my sister's birthday.
What's your sister's name?
Mary.
Happy birthday, Mary.
Yeah, happy birthday, Mary Claire.
Heritage,
I'll see you tonight.
Yep, from Heritage Radio Network to your ears. Happy, happy birthday. I almost asked you how old she was, and I was like, don't do that. Don't do that. Not everyone likes that. And next week, we have coming on air.
We have Keith Beavers and Chef James from In Vino.
My very good friends. I just ate there. It was fan-freaking-tastic. So cool. I can't wait to have them on and talk about how wonderful they are. Andy and Ashley, thank you so much for coming on air.
Thank you for having us.
PresentationPartyNights.com. I'm going to try to make it to Union Hall. It doesn't happen to be at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon,
no.
Is it? God, everything cool happens at night. Oh, pretty soon my kid's going to be in college in like 16 more years. And I will rejoin the night people. Until next week, everyone, thank you so much for listening, and keep playing with fire and knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.